Okay. Yeah.
Better now?
That's better. Yeah, it seems to be.
Speaking of which,
I don't know if I'm sounding less compressed, but it should be less compressed.
But you do a lot of compression in post anyway, don't you?
Well, I'm trying not to, though. That's the thing.
You want to do less compression?
I'm doing less compression so I don't sound like, you know, Casey Kasem in the 80s.
See, I always thought you were going for Casey Kasem in the 80s.
Well,
of course you are, kind of, but...
Kind of, but not really. Casey, if you've never listened to Casey Kasem, he hosted a show called America's Top 40, or American Top 40, I guess it is.
Oh my God, that's so sad that there are people who have never heard Casey Kasem.
Yeah. And they did like the long distance dedication.
Yeah. We used to listen to that on, it was Sunday morning or whatever it was, like on the way home from church or whatever, you know, when I was really little.
Wow. You went to church?
For a very small amount. I never told this story. We used to go to Episcopal church. God, this would be funny if this ends up in the show. We used to go to an Episcopal church, and I won't say when and I won't say where. But there was my father was on the, I don't know, board of directors or board of advisors or, you know what I mean? Whatever
for the church.
Yeah. So my father was not a particularly religious man for most of his life, although he became slightly more so when he got sick. But anyway, the long story, but he would go after the service. He would go do this thing while we went to like Sunday school or, you know, whatever. And it was like the people who make the decisions in the church or whatever. Because my father was the kind of person who wanted to, you know, decisions are made by those who show up. You know, he was that kind of guy. He wanted to be in the know. So he went to this thing, and there was a kid in the town who had cancer. And, but the kid who had cancer, I think, went to a Catholic church. So the story goes, my father said, hey, we should take up a collection for the kid's family who has cancer. And someone in the room, I don't know if it was like the reverend or somebody, said, well, he's not one of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And supposedly, so goes the story, my father said, one of us? And walked out and got us, and we never went back to that church.
Wow.
But then we started going to, occasionally we would go, usually it was, you know, yeah, we would go to Waterbury to go see my, grandparents. And then on the way home, yeah, Casey Kasem would play or something. But yeah, it's, you know, that story of my father, if it is true, I think about that all the time. I think about that story all the time.
Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of person you want to be. You don't want to be that other person.
Yeah.
Now, you know, not to hero worship my father, you know, he was not a perfect person, but like, if that story is true, that's a good story. And even if it's not true, it's a good story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better if it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a gear question.
Okay. Here we go.
This comes to us, from,
wait, it's
Jeffrey
an actual question from somebody.
Yeah. Comes from Jeffrey in Maryland.
Okay.
And, he wants to know, it's 20. What are you drinking? Scotch? I can hear ice. What are you doing?
You know what? It's 11:30 in the morning and you got me drinking Coca-Cola.
That's all right.
I learned it by watching you. Go ahead.
It's 2024.
Yep.
And in our house, the Wi-Fi router,
yep,
or router, if you're in the UK.
Nice.
It's downstairs. At kind of it's on the let's say the east. No, I'm sorry. It's on the west side of the basement downstairs.
I got a map in my head. Okay. West side of the basement downstairs.
West side of the basement downstairs. Our bedroom, east side of the house, yes, upstairs.
Yep.
Okay. And because of the way our house is constructed, it's basically concrete and metal lath and brick. So our entire house is kind of a Faraday cage.
Giant Faraday cage, yeah.
Yeah. And it wreaks havoc on Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So I was thinking like, okay, I could get one of these Nest things.
Sure.
But being the Apple kind of fanboy that I am,
uh-huh,
is it goofy to go back to the Airport Extreme that was discontinued in 2013. Granted, it doesn't have AX, but it's got A, B, N, and C.
Yeah, which wildly is very secure. Slow now.
Is it though?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that you have Fios?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not going to get Fios speeds through N, or you're going to get, you know, 30 megs per second or something, you know, or, you know, you're going to get 10, 15 megs per second versus whatever speed your Wi-Fi, that will severely limit your Wi-Fi.
Mm.
I mean, how about going, my mother has those Eero. She likes those.
Yeah. I got to get something because we don't have the Wi-Fi upstairs. If I'm in the guest room, or basically once you get to the middle of the house, it starts tailing off.
Is your
trailing off? Is it tailing off or trailing off?
Trailing off?
Tailing off, trailing off.
Did you, if
trailing,
you,
trailing, trailing. What is it? Is it tailing off?
I'll be over here when you make a decision.
Is it tails off? Because it's the tail.
It tails
right?
off, but it's trailing but
it's
off.
It's trailing off. Yeah. Tailing off. Trailing off. Tailing off. Anyway, one of those. Anyway,
are you hardwired in via Ethernet, your computer?
No. No, because I would have to run Cat 6 cable or whatever from the router up into the ceiling across, and I suppose I could have it done.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, my ideal thing would be for you to run a cable from, you know, I'm assuming the wireless router that you have is next to the modems or whatever, and then if it had
the
Ethernet,
same thing. It's only one device.
Okay. That you would run. See, it's interesting. My Fios is a black box on the wall, and there's a.
Well, yeah. In the other room, in the machine room, there's the ONT.
Yes.
Right. Okay. That's the main box of a Fios.
I have that next
Fios
to my
system.
Router. And then if I were you in your situation, I would run theoretically a Ethernet cable up to the other corner of the house and have another router up there, another wireless access point. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be the ideal solution. Because
that would actually be easy because all I have to, there's an old phone jack right in basically straight above it in the hallway. So I could pull that phone jack wire out and replace it with a Cat 6 cable from the, yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Just because any sort of mesh thing you're working on is still going to be fighting itself through the chicken wire.
Yeah.
So,
and I think Verizon
it'll probably
has
help,
a,
but it's
a
not
Fios
be the best idea.
Extender that looks, it looks the same thing. It's just an extender. So maybe I can do that.
I mean, yeah, that would be the way that I would go.
I will tell him. So thank you for writing in.
You know, yesterday I met up with that Dan Carlin
hardcore history.
Yeah. And,
did it take you 4.5 hours to shoot his portrait?
Cause he does a long show.
Yeah.
He was actually very, generous with his time. He was like, yeah, take as much time as you want. Like, you know, great. And we had a good time. We were chatting. We were having a good time. Very nice guy. Very, very nice guy. Great show. If you don't listen to Hardcore History and you're into history, you're crazy. Hardcore History is great. Or you didn't know about it. Now you do. But anyway, one of the things I asked him was what he records on, what kind of mic? And
Neumann U87.
That's what you think? You've heard his show?
Not in a long time, but okay. Yeah, I'm just assuming because like all the high end kids, that's what the Shure 87B is no longer good enough for the Neumann kids. The Neumann kids have to use, you know.
Yeah.
Leicas.
I said, what, SM7? He said, no, RE20.
What is it? Really?
Yeah. And I said,
the RE20 is a staple in radio.
Yeah. And that's what he said. He's just like, it's from my days of being on radio. Like, that's what I use.
See, I use the RE320, which is a little brighter, but it has a similar profile.
But he also mentioned that whoever helps him with his engineering or does his mixes or whatever it is, keeps trying to get him to upgrade to a newer, fancier, whatever mic. And he doesn't want to because he doesn't want to change the way he sounds on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting the decisions that.
That's crazy that he uses an RE20. They're not expensive mics.
No, it was a $250 mic.
Something, $350 maybe.
Yeah. I mean, well, you also got to remember, I mean, any of those SM7s are about the same price, right? I mean, yeah. Any of these sort of large diaphragm dynamic, you know, like the PR40 that I'm using, right? This Heil mic is around the same. It's like $350, $320.
Yeah. You don't have to spend $1,000 to get a good podcast mic.
No.
You don't have to spend anywhere. You don't have to spend $300 to be honest with you. You can spend $99, $59.
Whatever I see Howard Stern with like a U87 or whatever he has on his thing. And he's just like grabbing onto it, but somehow there's no.
How does he not get handling noise?
I don't know. I think about that all the time.
Because he does. He grabs onto the mic and he'll bring it closer. And the quality of his, like if I bring my, okay, real time, I'm going to kind of do what he does with my mic, with my, here we go.
Yeah.
All right. Ready?
Yep.
So I have it right. I have my hand behind it and I've grabbed hold of it. And now if I let go.
Yeah.
The quality of my voice completely changes.
Yeah. But he has his hand around the side of the thing.
Yeah. That's what I have. You know, and I've got the foam. There's, you can hear the foam.
Yeah.
The foam windshield.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
He has really great engineers that are watching his every move with, you know, faders at the, I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway, I just, inside baseball, as it were, found that interesting. RE20. Classic.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is. Voice RE20.
Yeah.
All right, what we had a topic that I've completely forgotten about.
Dan Winters.
Oh, the Dan Winters thing. Okay.
The Nat Geo thing.
All right, I've watched a number of these now. Have you watched just the Dan Winters?
I only watched the Dan, and I watched it twice because I wanted to make sure I got it.
Can I
give you my
thoughts.
2 cents?
Yep, I want the 2 cents.
It's a love story.
Between him and his
first
wife.
That too, yes. That too, yes. First and foremost, it's a love story between him and his wife.
Okay.
Secondly, it is a love story between Dan and his son, Dylan.
Yes.
Thirdly, it is a love story between Dan and photography.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that Dan is so good at what he does is he is absolutely 100% in love with making pictures.
Yes, I think that is true. And I also think it's the positive spin on the situation. I don't mean spin as in like a negative thing. Positive spin is a negative thing. It's just like, yes, that's the good side of what it felt to me was going on.
Yeah. I think the only two things in this world that Dan Winters loves more than making pictures are his wife and his son.
Yes.
And that I really do think it's as simple as that. That the technical stuff you can learn, the lighting you can learn, the post you can learn, there is something that happens to him. You can see it in his face, you can see it in his approach, you can see it in how he treats people. He is in love with making powerful, compelling, thought-provoking pictures. And I love that.
Yes. I think, though, that he, to me, when I watched that, and I've watched it a couple of times now, there's definitely, I think that his relationship with the camera and with photography is that deep because he has a harder time describing those emotions or emoting with people, and he can put it into the photography because the photography doesn't care about, you know what I'm saying? Like the camera, his relationship with the camera can be what he wants it to be.
I mean, I think there's definitely a relationship he has with objects, and the camera is one of those objects.
Yes. And I think objects are easier for him than people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. However, at the end of it, when he was in the shipyard,
yep,
just coming to tears at the amount, the outpouring of warmth and cooperation by these people to let him take their portraits. And yeah. and the connection that he felt to them through the work. And I think that's kind of where we're getting to a similar place, is his connection to people comes through the lens.
Yes. I think the flip side of that is that when his son said, I felt more like a art project than a kid, and yeah. I'm not smiling in any of these pictures.
Yeah.
Dan wasn't crying when his son was saying those things. So that's, it's just interesting.
Well,
it's interesting the way
he did get emotional. He didn't break down.
Right. But you're saying he did get emotional at the end, or seemed to.
I think even with Dylan, it wasn't as he got more emotional in the car talking to his friend on the way to the boat in Iceland.
Yep.
About it.
Yep. It's just the way he processes things. I just think that I'm not, this is not like a rip on Dan or the way he sees the world. It's just really interesting seeing the way he processes people and emotions, and it's not normative. You know what I mean?
Yes. So one of the things that stuck out for me for that was, and this, it's so lovely the way they put it together, because Catherine, his wife, mm-hmm. Is narrator of this. For all intents and purposes. Yeah. Yes, it follows a few stories. It follows the story of them. It follows the story of Dan and his son, Dylan.
Yep.
It follows the story of him wanting to go photograph these massive ships being taken apart. First taken apart, but he wasn't allowed access to this particular shipbreaking yard. So he went to this other place and photographed ships being repaired as a fulfillment of something that happened to him in his childhood that has stayed with him his entire life. But what I loved about the narration of Catherine was, and I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget, she said, Dan does whatever he can to stay in a place of awe and wonder. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so telling about how he sees and appreciates every aspect of the world around him. And you can see it when he was setting up for the Artemis shots, where he was
I think I would change that sentence and say, wait, exactly what did you just say?
She says,
yeah,
Dan does whatever he can to stay in a place of awe and wonder.
But then you said something like that he sees everything around him. I don't think he sees the beauty in everything around him. I think he picks specific things that he finds beauty in. I think there's a specificity to the way he sees the world, and that's like his superpower. So that's the only amendment that I would make to what you were saying, is that I think that it has. Yeah, it's really interesting watching him think and work and tinker. I think from a filmmaker story perspective, I could imagine the producers going to them and saying, all right, we're going to do this episode on you. We need an arc. Is there a project you've been thinking about doing recently? Like, we'll finance that so we can go along and film you doing it. And he said, well, there's this ship. And then they make it all about, they kind of lean into that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wasn't on the thing, but to me, it feels very much like one of those, a decision that they made to, like, you know, build the thing around this idea of the ship that he saw when he was a kid, which totally works.
I'm curious how that came about, because it seems like there was a lot of planning that had to go into, you know, getting the fixer and getting the flights and getting this. I wonder if that was already in progress on some level before Nat Geo came in, or because he does so much work with Nat Geo and has in the past anyway.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a more perfect fit other than maybe Joe McNally,
sure.
who's done a lot of work for them as well.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear the story of how. Did he go to them? Did they come to him? Like, how did that come about?
Well, it's interesting because now that I've watched, you know, five of them, I think four of them. It's interesting the way that they've, you know, they all have some sort of arc, you know, some like project the person is working on that they can bounce back to like keep the story moving along. It's interesting the way they've done it. It's also interesting. It's just a side note. That, you know, this was made by Nat Geo about all these photographers. But Nat Geo, are they still making the magazine anymore?
The print magazine? No, not to my knowledge.
Right. So it's this interesting thing of whoever bought Nat Geo, the name, isn't it? Wasn't it owned by Fox guy for a while?
Fox guy.
You know, the guy who owns Fox. Murdoch. Didn't he buy it for a while?
Oh.
I guess what I'm saying is that it's interesting to me to think.
It's owned here. I'm looking at Wiki now. It's owned by the until 2015, the magazine was completely owned and managed by the National Geographic Society.
Right.
Since 2015, controlling interest has been held by National Geographic Partners.
Okay. Who owns the National Geographic Partners?
And they don't go into. Okay. National Geographic Partners giving 21st Century Fox a 73% controlling interest.
Yeah, Fox.
In exchange for $725 million. In December 2017, a deal was announced for Disney to acquire 21st Century Fox, including the controlling interest in National Geographic Partners. NG Media Publishing Unit was operationally transferred into Disney Publishing Worldwide.
Right. Disney owns it, right. Okay, so what I find interesting about the show is that it is a series of documentaries about a number of photographers. It's like meta, right? It's biopics about photographers making pictures.
Right.
You know, it's like this weird, I think they're really fascinating, but there's part of it's just like, yeah, because you're not really hiring photographers anymore.
No, in fact, here, the final bit of this. In September 2022, the magazine laid off six of its top editors.
Yeah.
In June 2023, the magazine laid off all of its staff writers, shifting to an entirely freelance-based writing model, and announced that beginning in 2024, it would no longer offer newsstand purchases.
Right. So even when they have, you know, they go back to the guy who's, I don't know if it's in that episode or in the other ones, where they're talking to a Nat Geo photo editor or editor or you know, like some person from National Geographic who worked with the photographers, because they do that in a lot of the episodes.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, worked with the photographers.
You know, well, I
like,
think okay.
It's an interesting, it's like, and I don't mean that National Geographic has to be what it always, the brand always has to be what it was, but it's interesting. It feels like it's like trading on the past while doing something now. You know, this whole
maybe,
series.
Maybe. I mean, I think you can still value photography.
Sure.
And I think these companies would say that they still value photography. But my assumption is that they don't value photography above any other type of content because now it's all simply content.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So it almost like whether you're, you know, I don't know, Joe McNally or, you know, Amy Vitale, who's done a lot of stuff with them or, you know, whoever. Unfortunately, it seems like all of that has been lumped together.
Yep.
It's hard to say where it's going to go. I'm personally grateful that they're still doing things that are specifically and uniquely photography centric.
Yes. But again, than, it's meta's photography, right? It's not photography. It's showing photographers working, which is interesting. But, you know,
for a television show, what else are you going to do?
No. There's an episode on this storm chaser. I forget what the woman's name is. I'm sorry. Hold on, let me pull it up so I'm not completely ignoring this person. There is a whole scene in you know, it's really terrible the way that Crystal Wright, and they show her like doing this whole rock climbing shot where she put LEDs in this crack in a wall and then had somebody climbing it, and they shot it at night and did this whole, it's like, it's beautiful what she did.
Yeah.
But it's funny because like the entire time she's talking, she's just like, yeah, my whole career has been basically going into debt to do something I wish I wanted to do, and then trying to fight my way out of debt, and then going back into debt to do some project that I wanted to do.
Right.
And it's funny, like these are the successful people they're making documentaries about.
Well, I mean, look, it's culturally.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love somebody putting it all on the line.
Yeah.
For the thing that they, I mean, it's Sylvester Stallone telling the story over and over again of
how he made
writing
Rocky
in the hotel room with no money. Yep. And then, you know, and they subsequently push him out. So he now has no ownership of Rocky, which is kind of
he doesn't
sad,
now?
But no,
how'd they
he
do
owns
that?
None of it. Irvin Kershner is the producer that kicked him out of the franchise and now owns
bastard
all the rights. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, so anyway,
I think it's Irvin Kershner. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not trying to belabor the point, but like, it's just, it is interesting watching these things and like watching these people work so hard and everyone wants to watch them. And then like, you know, they're fighting for every single scrap of work. You know what I mean?
But they're making the work and that's what's gotten them noticed. It's not the fact that they fought for it. It's the fact that they made all the work. I mean, yes, the fighting is still part of it, but if this woman didn't have the body of work that she does, she wouldn't be as interesting to them from a, again, back to that word, from a content
from
perspective.
From a content perspective. Yeah.
You know, Dan Winters.
Do you feel like you get a good, do you think it was a good portrait of Dan Winters or do you think that it was, I mean, you've talked to him a bit. I've talked
to
him a bit.
Well, I can think of a conversation that was better. But, you know,
we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. I've talked to Dan a couple times.
Yeah.
And
so you can kind of feel where this was edited. Could you?
He's a fascinating man.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating man who gets, who goes down a rabbit hole on things that are really interesting to him and coincidentally were really interesting to me. And we have, you know, similar feelings about some of this stuff, but he's a hard person. I think he would be a hard person to have in your life.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Because I think he is, and I think maybe part of it is from his bike accident where, you know, the case was made that, you know, it kind of shook something loose and, you know, his ADHD and that kind of thing came on the back of that.
Did you notice? Okay. There's a little scene that they play a couple times where it's him shooting and he turns and he's like, "Hey Dylan, where's the light?"
Yeah.
When he's younger.
Yeah.
Where he has a totally different demeanor than he does now. Did you catch that?
Yeah, he's in the younger, and maybe it was the accident. I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
Or is it the joy he gets on set? Because at that time, I mean, remember what?
Yeah, but they show him at the Artemis launch, and he's. I mean, yeah, these are really great.
Yeah, but he's out there. He's out there shooting big rockets. He's not shooting people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, Catherine said in the VO that, you know, he was on fire. He was working all the time.
Yeah, he was
he was just nonstop.
Yep.
And you see the energy, I think anyway, that's what I picked up on, is you see the energy between this guy who almost, he's almost vibrating. He's so excited. Yeah, yeah, he's almost vibrating. He's so in it.
Yep.
You know, and now 20 years, 30 years later, whatever it is, I think that excitement is still there, but it feels like that joy, that excitement, that energy is internalized more than it's externalized is the way it felt to me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Could be. I have friends who are on a lot of medication for the similar stuff that he's on medication for.
Mm.
And they feel the same way. There's like this, having a hard time putting into words, but like this, like the edge has been dulled. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As a way of not having the downside, you get a lot less of the upside, you know, that kind of, you know, it's like a real leveling agent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he feels a little like that. And I'm not, you know, armchair psychologizing it, but like it is, when you watch him, it's like, oh, I mean, yeah, he's interested. He's doing that thing, but it doesn't feel like it feels like laser focus, but not laser power. You know what I mean? Like behind his eyes now.
Yeah.
And it could just be getting older.
I think I'm getting something different.
Okay.
And maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's because I've never been on any kind of medication like that. I'm projecting, you know, it can't be that. It's gotta be, you know, maybe I'm unfairly comparing it because I've never experienced it.
Yeah.
But it seems like he is still mean, that was the through line for me is, and it's, it, you see it with people like Avedon, you see it with, you know, painters like de Kooning, you see it with, you know, writers, you see those people for whom doing this work, connecting to this work, that's the thing. That's the thing that drives them.
Yep.
And it's going to rip apart relationships. It's going to rip apart families. But at the end of the day, the work is still standing.
Is that okay?
Depends on what your goal is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you want to be...
Is that unfair to the other people in your life?
I think they might interpret it that way, but it may not be unfair on the part of the person who's kind of living...
Right. And I'm not saying...
Does Dan think his behavior is unfair to Catherine? I don't know.
Yeah. I bet you sometimes he probably would.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he seemed like he was apologetic towards Dylan, where he was just like, this is the way that I can connect with you. And I thought that we were making things together. Where the kid was like, no, 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 you were making a thing of me. That's kind of how I felt.
I mean, there was definitely that part of that.
That moment was pretty intense to me, where he looks and he's just like, I'm not smiling in any of these pictures.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think it's a... Man, do you have to go that deep to...
I mean, he even says it himself that he like has romanticized his, I'll call them in the moment, shortcomings in the past as like, this is romantic in an artsy way. But he himself has sort of said, but I don't know if that's actually fair.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's not just artists, certainly. I mean, you know, I know lawyers and everyone else and, you know, people in every field who work so much that to the detriment of their relationships and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I think you have to make that choice for yourself. I think there's a focus that Dan and people like Dan, whether, you know, to your point, whether you're an artist in the traditional sense or whether you're a stockbroker or, you know, whatever it is. I think there's a level of focus and a level of drive and energy that those kinds of people bring to their work that can be, not always, but it can be what sets them apart from them and everybody else in their field.
Yep. Could be. Or maybe they think that it is, and that's a good excuse.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Dan is a really fascinating man. And I think as much as he loves making pictures, the idea that he also has been making sets and making props and making, you know, models for his film, his short film that he made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is so much making going on in his life that it surprises me that he has the time, the energy, and any focus left for anything else, let alone anyone else.
Yeah.
Would he say that that's worth it? Well, I mean, he keeps doing it. So
the flip side is also that it seems like his relationship, Catherine is her name?
Catherine, yeah.
That he also sort of alludes to the fact that, you know, he wouldn't have been able to do what he does without her kind of controlling everything and managing everything behind the scenes.
Which, every picture that goes out, she looks at it.
Yep.
You know, and you know, on some level approves it. I know in all my dealings with
is that just because he would make a bad decision on his own or might not have perspective in the moment?
I don't think it's either one of those. I think he absolutely sees her as a collaborator on every aspect of his life, personal or professional.
Yeah.
You know, when we spoke, it took a few times because he was really busy. It took a few times to coordinate it and make it happen. I never talked to Dan until I talked to Dan. Everything else was through Catherine, and she was absolutely lovely.
Yep.
Absolutely lovely. She was just fantastic.
And she probably understands this is the way he is.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's a little bit of, you don't want to deal with him through this whole process. like it'll never get done, or you know what I mean? Like those are not his strengths.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And what a brilliant collaboration then, finding that person. Yeah. I mean, look, I obviously I'm nowhere near Dan, but I feel like I have a similar relationship with Adrian. Everything that I put out, she sees. Everything that I write, she looks at first. Everything that I think about doing, like what's the next thing that I'm thinking about, we will have conversations, sometimes ad nauseum, about, hi, honey,
you,
whether or not...
You having a conversation.
whether or not it's a good idea or whether it needs to be tweaked. And I think there are a couple things that come out of that. Part of it is I think, and maybe Dan feels this too.
Yeah.
There's an uncertainty.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you and I have spoken with, to, and about people at all levels of creative rock stardom, and every level experiences some sort of imposter syndrome. Is that fair?
Sure. Yeah.
So maybe there's part, maybe it's a creative and existential gut check. You know, maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Here's a question specifically for you. Do you feel like you actually need the input back, or you need a sounding board to sort of hear your words out loud?
Both.
Okay.
Both in some cases. Because, okay, I'll give you an example. May I give you an example?
Please, give me an example.
All right.
Jeffrey from Maryland.
Long time listener, first time caller. You and I were talking earlier, and I just want to say, all bullshit aside, I appreciate that conversation.
Thumbs up. Yes.
I appreciate it. And that's all I can say about it.
Okay.
You had brought up Dorothy Simpson Krause.
Yes.
Who is someone who, she is the person I learned how to do a lot of the techniques and things that I use in my work. That came from her. Bonnie Lakota, there were a couple other people, but mostly Dorothy and Bonnie. In fact, when I got Dorothy's book, I even reached out to her and said, hey, I can't figure this part out. And she was kind enough to, well, here's what you, try this, try the, she's very cool. I look at her work and I don't see, I see a similarity in technique.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where I am envious of her work. I look at her work and go, man, I wish I could do stuff like that.
Sure.
You look at her work and you said, you know, your reaction, go ahead. I don't want to steal your thunder. Go ahead.
Like I look at her work and sometimes I wouldn't know if it was yours or hers. There's a lot of overlap.
And I take that as a huge compliment because I don't see it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So this is the point I'm trying to get to is like maybe these kinds of collaborations, kind of like, you know, the one that Dan has with Catherine, and I'm sure that you run things by Heather. Maybe not everything. Yeah. I don't know the degree of your creative collaboration, but I'm sure that sometimes you just need another set of eyes, and they're eyes that you want to know that you can trust.
Right.
You know, it's not like showing stuff to, you know, my mom who would go, oh, it's so great. You know, like they have to say yes. Sure. They're your mom. There are
people in your life who you can show stuff to and they will give you an honest answer. And also they know, you know, there's people I can show two pictures that I'm stuck between two pictures and I'll say, which one? I'll look at the one on the left.
Yeah.
And I'll look at it and I'll go, yeah, you're right. It's the one on the left.
And sometimes there's some weird interpretation thing that happened. And that's what you and I talked about this morning.
Yep.
And I'm grateful that we could kind of talk about some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I can tell you where I'm coming from. You can tell me where you're coming from. And we each kind of end up scratching our heads going, huh, that's not what I thought.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Despite the fact that we talk for hours a week.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still stuff that goes under the radar for whatever reason.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, I don't really know where I'm going with this other than to say that those kinds of collaborations, and specifically Dan, since that's what we're talking about, I think Dan's relationship, personal and professional, runs deeper with Catherine than you and I will ever know.
Oh, absolutely. I think he would be lost without her.
Yes.
He relies on her in a way that I don't think I rely on anybody, you know, as much as I rely on my wife.
Yeah.
You know.
Could you, okay, let me ask you, could you ever see yourself in that kind of, I don't want to say relationship because but that kind of partnership where the collaborative nature of it runs so deep. Or do you need to not have that much riding on someone else's kind of input? Is it, you know what I'm trying to get to?
Yeah. I mean, I generally like to think that I should be able to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
I have been in more intense sort of creative collaboration relationships before, and I found them satisfying. In fact, I found them invigorating at times, mm-hmm. in a way that being alone does not do.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan's thing, it feels less about creativity and more about function. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, his creativity is made possible by the fact that his wife is good at all the other things. Which is different than, say, you know, the Eames couple or something. You know what I mean? Like people who are actively a couple who's making creative decisions together, you know, or the Coen brothers or something, you know. But it's, and I think your process changes. If that's the way that your world is working, you can put less weight in one direction and put it on something else. You know what I mean? Like I don't need to worry about that anymore. Somebody else has that taken care of. Okay. Now I can really go in this direction. I think what happens is that your body leans in that direction and maybe your muscles atrophy in the stuff that you let up on a little bit, you know, that's all my worry is that there's a point at which I'm leaning so much on someone else's help that I wouldn't be able to stand without them.
Yeah.
That would be my fear. In that kind of situation. When I watch him, he does feel like he's in his own sort of Dan world, and that there's sort of people, his wife specifically mostly, but I mean other people who are sort of like laying down the sidewalk in front of him as he keeps walking. You know what I mean? So he doesn't fall in the swamp, you know, which if that's what it takes for that person to do the amazing things that they do, this is not, I don't think it's wrong. And I don't think that it's unusual. I think there's a lot of people like that, but it's a different way than it's different than I thought people would be when I was younger, right? I feel like I always imagined that a complete adult, whatever that means, like being an adult in the world, means sort of being able to do all the skills, you know?
Right.
And
well, and you've been very clear about, like, I couldn't, you know, we've talked about the post stuff.
Sure.
I could never turn this over to people because part that I really like.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be my work then. It would be a collaboration, which is a whole other thing, which is fine. But yeah, I like doing that. And I like sort of having the thing be mine. Like, yeah, this is what I did.
It sounds like you couldn't ever be like a film director. Because it's relinquishing too much.
No, I think I could do it as, I think I actually could be a film director. Because, well, first of all, it depends on who you're bringing in to do it. But that to me feels like a completely different art format, you know? I mean, obviously it is, but that is collaborative by nature, you know? And I've made short films with people who were helping me shoot them. And yes, most of it was me writing and me making decisions and me editing and all the rest of it. But
right. So not yeah, but those were
too small to be able to do. I wouldn't be able to do a feature on my own. Well, you could, but you know, that would be crazy. I think if you found the right people, I think film is such that there are so many skills that you'd have to be so good at that no one could be good at all of them.
Yeah.
You know, where the things that you and I do are smaller than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, and it's.
I loved it. I loved seeing behind the curtain of seeing someone who is so singular at the top of their game and has been for many, many years, but this, no disrespect by this at all, seeing how screwed up he is.
Yeah.
Seeing how human he is, seeing how difficult some of the choices that he's made around who and how he is
affect him.
And I love seeing that. It was vulnerable. It was honest. But I applaud him.
You know, it's one thing if you look at what's his autobiography book? The Seeing book. What's it called? I can see it from here. It's across the room. You know, Dan's autobiography.
Dan's book. Speaking of Seeing.
Speaking of Seeing.
Isn't that what it is?
No, that's a different thing. That's the thing I do with Sandy. What is this thing? What is this thing called?
Road to Seeing.
Road to Seeing.
Wise ass.
Is that like
that's
if you?
Funny.
If
sorry
you,
about that.
It's fine. If you didn't read,
I knew it was something about Seeing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Hey, we're memorable. If you didn't read the book and know what's going on in his head, and you just look at, say, the editorial portraits book or something,
yeah,
you would think this person is a madman perfectionist, and his whole life must be so perfect,
right? Completely like different.
OCD.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I would say Road to Seeing is. There are two books that I often recommend when people ask what books should I get on photography. It's Magnum Contact Sheets and Road to Seeing.
Yes. And I actually never finished reading Road to Seeing. I read like half of it.
Well, it's about 4,200 pages. That's
well, I mean,
it's a big book.
It's maximalist in the sense that everything that Dan does is maximalist, right? I think if you sometimes you look at his work and you think, wow, this person must have it all together. And that's why, you know, I've told the story before of like watching him light in person. And realizing that he's just doing the same thing everyone else does. He's just really good at it. And he has a specific way of thinking about it. You know, like the differences between him and everyone else are in his head and nowhere else. He was sitting there and he was going, oh, yeah, bring that, bring the fill up 2/10 of a stop. Okay. Bring that down a foot. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he was doing the same stuff everyone else does.
It's not the hardware.
No.
It's in how he sees.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that is, it's fun. Not fun. Yeah, it's fun to see and think about and watch him do. But it also makes you realize that like Dan's world is in Dan's head as much as, so it's sort of like all of these things that he does are sort of his attempt at dumping his head out into the real world. That's what it kind of feels like to me.
But couldn't you say that about any? I mean, couldn't you say the same thing about Picasso?
Sure.
Or Pollock?
Yeah. Yes. But I think that Picasso and, well, Pollock's crazy, but I think Picasso, yes, that's true of everyone. But I think specifically for Dan, his communication skills are as much about his photographic art output than it is his words. You know, I've read things he's written. I've watched him give a number of talks, and I've spoken to him myself, and I've listened to your interview with him and other people's interviews with him. I would rather look at his pictures than hear him talk personally.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Because
you'd rather hear him talk.
I would much rather hear him talk. I would much rather hear him talk about the work.
See, I want to see what that kind of mind results in.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's the fundamental difference between Bill and Jeffrey.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like if you told me you can take away his entire body of work. You can either have his entire body of work and take away Road to Seeing and all the conversations that you've heard and seen and what, or you can have all those things and not ever look at his body of work.
Yeah.
I would take the conversations.
Yeah. See, no, I would throw the conversations in the fire.
Wow. That's harsh. I didn't say I would throw the pictures in the fire.
No. I just like, okay. If it came down between those two, it's just like, I want to see what he can do, not what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Like to me, I think he's a more effective communicator visually than he is speaking.
Hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
That's cool.
Just different ways of seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I think that I really would be interested to see more footage of him working 30 years ago to see if he, because I've only ever heard or talked to him since, I don't know, I met him in 2017. When did you do your interview with him?
I don't know. 16?
Yeah. So 17. Somewhere around the same time.
Yeah.
I've only ever known him.
I first spoke to him and he did a talk at the Portrait Gallery in I think 2013, maybe 2012, some 2013.
He's a very,
no, I wasn't here then. So maybe 2014.
He's a very sweet man and very giving of his attention and time if you get him in the right mood.
And he's a great hugger.
Yeah.
if you ever get a chance to hug Dan Winters.
Yeah.
He's a good hugger.
Well, he's a big bear of a man. He's a big guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very effusive.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's I watch that and I watch his interaction with his family, and it's I've discussed this with some other people since I watched it. I was talking to Conrad about it and my mom about it and stuff, and it's like I wonder if sometimes for someone to be so all in on one specific part of their brain, they have to be deficient in others. You know, like you can't have it all.
Well, I think he was very clear about that.
Yeah, it's like it's a superpower.
And Catherine was very clear about that.
Yeah. But I wonder if that's the case, not just with him, but with people in general. Where I was going with that. Yeah. But it is interesting because like some of the other ones, the Anand Varma, who does he shoots like insects and bees and all kinds of stuff like that, like real small things. And they show him doing a whole project where he's photographing chickens incubating in eggs.
Oh yeah.
He like cuts eggs open and shoots them in the incubators over time. And all the things that go wrong and the fact that his life is all just about sort of hacking engineering stuff to make things work.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's, his mind just works very differently because you see him interacting with his wife and with his assistant and stuff. And it's not like Dan talking to his wife and his assistant. And then you watch the one about Crystal up on the mountain and she's much more, I mean, she's exclaiming like, whoa, like she's like a far more of an extrovert person where the other two guys are more introverted, you know? I'd imagine that somebody who's like there's the one about the photojournalist, which I have yet to watch, but I'd imagine just doing that job and being an advocate, you know, advocacy photojournalist kind of guy, like you got to be out versus in, you know what I mean?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think so.
So yeah, it's an interesting show. It makes me, it feels a little bit like taking six photographers and like sticking them in a test tube for 60 minutes, which is amazing. And I'm glad it happens. But they obviously picked six very specifically interesting in different ways photographers, right? That's what they were going for. The Artemis launch stuff is pretty cool. It's also funny that he's holding a 50R and a 100 GFX 100S the whole time. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love to see, a conversation with them, you know, a round table.
With all six of them.
Yeah. And hear that sort of moderated and then the moderator just step back and go, okay, I'm gonna let these horses out. Let's see where they run.
Do you think they'd get along?
No. I think they would be cordial.
Sure.
But I think there's enough difference, not having seen the other ones, just in hearing other photographers, you know, talk to and about and, you know, themselves and others. Everybody's got their own way of doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why it would be interesting.
Sure.
Like somebody would say, oh man, I didn't even think about that. And the other person would go, oh yeah, I didn't either. Wow, we can talk about that. And it's going to take those conversations in completely different directions because of the differences.
See, I wonder if it would be that or if their differences are such that they would have a hard time communicating.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
On a deeper level.
Yeah.
It does show you the scope and scale of photography, how wide it is, because all these people are living, other than the fact that they're all using a camera to do what they do, they're living in very different worlds.
It's
as a photographer, I look at that and I'm like, wow, like none of these are the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's interesting unto itself, but it is telling. I don't know. It's just cool.
Well, I wonder if there's something, and maybe this is something, maybe we're kind of getting long on time. Maybe something we can dive into. Is there something about being at that level that they don't have to be samey? Nobody's trying to outdo the other person in what they're just trying to do their own thing. I'm not looking at Instagram. I don't care what you're doing. Sure. I care what I want to do.
I also think that, you know, I think these people may care more about that stuff than they let on in documentaries. Because that's just the reality of every professional photographer I've ever spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that they think about those things, but when they're making a show about their creative process, they're not going to admit to thinking about those things.
Mm.
You know, I'd be willing to bet that some money on that reality.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's also, yeah. It's just, it's interesting, you know, but I mean, Dan's also an older guy. He's what, 60s?
You know what? I don't know how old Dan.
I thought they said at some point in it.
They might have, but I didn't write it down. Let's see.
You know, he's been around a long time. If he was born in 1962, which means he's what, 62 years old? Does that work out?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
yeah, he's 5 years older than me.
Okay. So sometimes if he just works the way he works, he's had a good career and probably made enough money that he can just sort of do what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like his hustle exists, but like if everyone said, no one's ever hiring a photographer again, I think Dan Winters would probably survive and just be able to keep doing what he's doing.
Well, but he's doing other, that's the other thing. He's directing films, yes. He's building miniatures, he's doing artwork.
Right. But how many of those things are paying the bills is my point. You know, I think he's able to do all of those things because he probably did pretty well doing what he did for 25 years.
Maybe. I've seen a lot of his artwork in editorial work.
Oh, in editorial, like in magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
He's a really interesting guy. If you are at all interested in him or his work, watching that documentary is very good.
And go pick up Road to Scene.
Yeah. I just love watching people work. I would watch 2 hours of him, just like scenes of him on sets working.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I would watch that all day long. Just cause I find that process fascinating. And I think a lot of other people do too. Both because then you can be like, oh, that's how he's doing that. But also just, I don't know, sometimes it validates. We all do all of this stuff in such a vacuum a lot of times, you know. Seeing other people working can often make you feel less like you're doing it wrong. I don't know.
Or more. I look at people and I go, I never would have thought about that.
Oh, okay.
Like, what have I been doing for the last 20 years or whatever? Oh, yeah.
Usually when I watch somebody on like shooting on set, or if I see some sort of video, it basically looks to me very similar to how I feel when I'm on set, like on a bigger set. Like if I'm working on something that has a budget and whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, man, that's what that looks like. So I guess I'm not doing it wrong when I do it, you know, like
it makes me
feel better. Like, okay, I'm not an idiot.
right. Well, not for that anyway.
No, not for that reason. it's a weird thing. Dan Winters, man.
Dan Winters. Do you want to use, unless you have somebody else, do you want to use the Storm Chaser girl as photographer?
Yeah, she's her stuff's great. I just had it up and I just put it down. Hold on. Her name is Crystal Wright with a K. Crystal.
K-R-Y?
Yeah.
S-T-A-L? W-R-I-G-H-T?
Crystal Wright, photographer. Yeah, and it's funny because like the stuff that she's doing are like storm chasing and rock climbing. Like, you know when they show the people, like she's not the rock climber. She's just the person photographing the rock climber.
Yeah, what's in that Coca-Cola?
I know. Mm-hmm. A little bit of rock and roll in the Coca-Cola. But they show her doing the, you know, like the foot shimmy thing up a wall, you know, where like they have the hands in your tools and then your feet kind of, it's like a way to get up a thing for non-climbers. You know, it's like it's on a rope and you like move your
like
hand.
Like a scramble
and then
type of thing?
Yeah. You push up with your leg and then you can slide the thing up and then you push up with the other leg and you slide the thing up. It's like a way to climb up a mountain just using the rope without having to touch the rock. But she's like going up on these things, you know, 300 feet up on a cliff's edge. And I'm like,
yeah, no.
Nope. And she tells a story of how in her episode of how she went along with a team of guys who were base jumping off of mountains in Antarctica or something like that, or Greenland, like some, you know, crazy thing that you shouldn't do. And then like one of the guys who was with the thing died, you know,
that she was with.
Yeah. Like he jumped and something went wrong. And by the time she got back down to the bottom of the mountain, they were like, "Hey, Crystal, we've got some really bad news."
Wait, she didn't know. Hold on.
She was with a bunch of guys who were jumping off the top of the mountain. Yes. She is not a base jumper.
Okay. So he base jumped. She moved on to other things, assuming that everything went well.
Yeah. She took pictures, and then started hiking down because they like went into clouds or whatever it is.
Right.
Not knowing that like one of the guys landed on the ground.
Tom cruising off the thing with the motorcycle.
And she didn't see the end of it.
Wow.
And then they couldn't find his body.
What?
They couldn't get to it or something. So they left it there.
They left his body there?
Yeah, they couldn't get to it. Like it was like, are more people going to die to get his body? God. So they like decided not to. And then there's some other crazy thing where she got.
This is this Crystal Wright person.
Yeah. 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 And there's some other crazy story where she was, she ended up getting hit by something. And she ended up getting like knocked out and her whole forehead cut open and all this kind of stuff.
While she was up on a mountain?
Yeah, it was like doing some other crazy, you know, like active thing. And I'm like, man, nope. No. I just don't have that gene. That risk gene.
No.
Because I see this kind of stuff.
I fall down and slip and like just going around the path in the woods that I've been around every day for the past 8 years.
Well, did they ever explain how Dan's bike accident happened, or they just, he had a bike accident?
I didn't hear anything. No, it was just like, it was a really bad bike accident. And
what does that mean?
He suffered, you know, all this damage, was in a halo for a while.
Did somebody hit him? Did he hit somebody? Was he going too fast? Was, you know, like I spin off in that direction. I yesterday I was going to pull out my skateboard and start skating again now that the weather's getting nicer.
Right.
And then yesterday I ended up on a skateboard fails Instagram thing.
Wait, somebody posted you on a...
No, not me. Like I ended up looking at.
You can see how that would be trans. I ended up Facebook. Yeah. Yeah.
I ended up watching,
a
bunch of Facebook or skateboarding fails. And I'm always thinking whenever I'm just messing around doing my kick turns on ramp stuff, I'm always thinking if this goes out the wrong way and I go down that way, my head's real close to that edge of that thing or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that probably won't happen, but it could physically happen. Like I'm within reach of that. And you watch all these fails and all these terrible things happening to people. And you're like, yep, that's exactly what I would imagine would happen if you tried to do that. And that's why I don't do it. Like people's heads bouncing off the ground and stuff. It's like,
All right, you can only keep one. I'm going to put you on the spot. You can only keep one.
Yep.
Dan Winters.
Yep.
Anton Corbijn.
Dan Winters.
Really?
The work? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
right.
I like Anton Corbijn. Why Anton Corbijn of all people?
Because I was just thinking about
Anton
Depeche Mode.
Corbijn.
I was just thinking about, I should go listen to Depeche Mode when this is over.
Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode.
Yeah. You know, last week I went and saw Magnetic Fields.
The band?
Yeah, the band, Magnetic Fields. They were doing
Think I knew that, did you?
69 love songs.
Yeah.
Well, we watched the first half. The next night we had to go somewhere else. So we saw the first show. We saw the first 34 and a half love songs. And then the next night we went and saw Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen speak.
And wouldn't it be funny if they did the other 34 and a half?
Yeah, you walk in and they're like, and the next tune on 69 love songs is... That would have been
like,
actually,
wait a minute.
That would have been pretty funny. Actually, pretty funny. They're so Tony and Rodney Mullen are up on stage. Now, Rodney Mullen was the freestyle guy, right? But he invented the flatland ollie. He invented the kickflip. He invented every move that is the basis of modern street skateboarding. Like Rodney
also
Mullen.
Played drums for you too.
And then Tony, of course, is, you know, the, like,
that wasn't
the,
him?
The ramp god, you know, like he's that guy. But then there's this other guy named Mark Gonzalez who like sort of invented street skating the way we see street skating and like the way people flow and stuff. Mark Gonzalez was in the audience. So it was the trifecta of sort of three guys of modern skateboarding. Were, like,
yeah, all you needed was
Steve
or Tracy Peralta.
Stacy Peralta. Anyway, it was just kind of like, wait, Gonz is in the audience? Like, wait, you know, nerd. I'm a nerd.
Right.
Yes, we can use her. Crystal's work is beautiful.
Crystal,
I will put Crystal Wright.
Crystal Wright.
Wouldn't
it be cool if her website was therighttime.com?
See, she should.
Therightstuff.com.
Yes. Is that some? Let's see if somebody has it. Therightstuff.com with a W.
Yeah.
Ah, healthcare products that make life easier. Hey, this is the kind of stuff you need. Activators, walkers.
Great. Thanks.
He's got the poles.
I'm not the one nursing a skateboarding injury.
Oh, snap. Yeah, I think my hip's back in one piece now.
There you go.
That hurt a lot. Eric Idle walked by me on the street yesterday.
Monty Python.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just Carlin and I are like taking a picture and he's got his arm around me and we're sitting there and like walks by us. It's like, he's like, yeah, that's Eric Idle. And I was like,
that's funny.
That is
Eric
Idle.
I saw him at a Fry's Electronics one time out in the valley.
Really?
Yeah.
He's
with his son.
Are we sure he's not cloned and he's just everywhere?
Yeah. Well, this was many, many years ago. It wasn't yesterday. wait a minute.
You got anything else?
I have nothing else.
How long have we been recording?
To Depeche Mode. I don't know, about 7.5 years.
Okay. Well, then we will go live our lives, and perhaps we will see you next week, people.
Gotta start with that shit again. Bye.
Bye.
We'll see you.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain. Something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have. This way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud. Everything we tried to make.